everyone. It's been said that every quilt tells a story, and it's so true. But I also believe every quilter has a story to tell. I wanted to hear about the people behind these wonderful quilts and thought you'd enjoy hearing about their lives also. Welcome to A Quilter's Life. Rose Turner Payne is the Mrs. Rose that Ruth Hong spoke about. What a great mentor she is to Ruth. I was so impressed with Rose's ability to include the young girls in their sewing guild. What a blessing she is to the many people she helps.
I wanted to thank you for being interviewed on The Quilter's Life. I really appreciate it.
Mm-hmm. No problem.
We'll start with your background. Where were you born and raised?
I was born in Murrayville, Illinois, which is about in the middle of Illinois, all in farm country. And if you know anything about Illinois, it's close to Jacksonville, which is, you know, kind of close to Springfield, but it's Murrayville's kind of just out in the middle. We had a kind of a three-room house and that sat on about an acre and a half. And my parents didn't farm, but they, all of the rest of their family did. But our property was big enough. We, you know, had a rooster house for chickens and had about an acre and garden. And so I grew up in the country in central Illinois. And we moved around a little bit in Illinois, but always, you know, the idea of living in town was just something my parents could not stand. They just couldn't imagine that. To the day my mother died, she never lived in a house that had curbs. And they needed to be out where they could do things, right? And so we always had not a whole lot of livestock, but some, and always had big gardens. So I grew up just expecting to and being around women that could do things, right?
Uh-huh.
So, you know, so you just learn how to cook, how to can, how to grow a garden, how to sew. Those things are all just, you know, they're just required when you live kind of out in the country like that.
Do you have a special memory of when you were growing up?
So down the street from me, or the road, as we called it, lived a lady that I called Granny Catherine. Well, I lived at Granny Catherine's house. And her daughter, Minnie, Minta Jean, but we called her Minnie, was 12 years older than me. So I was this precocious little girl, and Minnie and Granny Catherine taught me everything. They taught me how to read, how to sew, how to cook, how to be a good Christian. I lived down at Minnie's, and Granny Catherine worked at the bookbindery, and so she would bring home all the children's books. So I had this huge library at her house, and she had a bunch of brothers, and one of them would take all the hardback children's books and cut them into puzzles for me. I learned how to clean. I learned how to do everything down at Granny Catherine's. So my growing up was just marching back and forth between Granny Catherine's house and mine and being over there as much as she would let me. Now, it didn't occur to me at the time that she was working a full-time job and had a house to take care of, right? If Granny Catherine was home, I was down there. My mom was 18 when she had me. So she was a young mom and had a young family, and still she needed to work, and Dad worked. And so she was just fine with me being at Granny Catherine's.
Yeah.
I remember I didn't like the brooder house. I did not like the chickens. But I loved growing up in Murrayville because Granny Catherine was there.
Me.
And then Minnie went away to college. Well, if Minnie went to college, then I was going to college. And so there was never a question in my mind that I was going to college because Minnie did. Which is interesting because no one else on either side of my family had been to college. But it just didn't even occur to me that that wasn't what I was going to do. And so Granny Catherine gave me my first pattern and yard of fabric and zipper and a little sewing kit for Christmas the year I was 8. From that point on, there was no stopping me. I sewed everything I could get my hands on. And by the time I was, I think I was 12, I had entered a contest at the grocery store to win a sewing machine. But you had to be 18 to enter. So, of course, I enter my mom's information, but I don't tell her. Right?
Oh, no.
Right? So, but this is the way God works in your life, right? We had already moved away. And so we were, you know, like 2 or 3 hours away from Granny Catherine at this point. But she and Uncle Gene were there this weekend, and we get a phone call, and we had won that sewing machine. And Mom said, I don't know what you're talking about, winning a sewing machine, and I'm losing it, right? So we get in the car, Granny Catherine and Mom and I, and we go down to the sewing machine store. And we did not have any money.
Yeah.
But somehow or another, I wind up coming home with not the machine we won, but an upgraded version and a cabinet of my very own. So I never knew what happened between Mom and Granny Catherine, but I got a sewing machine.
Oh,
and
indeed.
So I made a dress to wear to school for me by the time I was still in third grade when I did that. So I sewed and sewed and sewed. Granny Catherine taught me some, but mostly I learned on my own. And there was nothing I wouldn't try. And at first, I didn't even have fabric. But, you know, my mom was in high school in the 50s, and those girls all had those big skirts.
Yeah.
Well, you whack a skirt off of a bodice, and you've got a lot of fabric. And so that's what I did. I just raided her closet and cut up her skirts. And I made my sister and I matching dresses out of one of her skirts.
Wow.
And so I just sewed and sewed. By the time I was in junior high, I made all the pom-pom girl costumes. There was like 20 of us. I just never stopped. Mom would tell me I had a certain amount of money to buy school clothes. Back then, you could buy a lot more fabric than you could clothes that were already made. Mm-hmm. So I always took the money, bought fabric, and then sewed like a crazy person. And I loved it, and I didn't quilt at all. But my great-grandmother wanted me to save all my scraps, which I did. I gave her these 4 huge garbage bags full of scraps, and she took them, and on an old Treadle sewing machine, she made 4 quilt tops out of those.
Oh, neat.
And so she gave them back to me. But she told me I had to quilt them, and I had to give at least one to my sister. So one of the first, I hadn't made a quilt, but my great-grandmother, my grandmother, and I got out my grandmother's old frame, and the 3 of us quilted my first quilt like 8 days in a row at my grandmother's house. And it was the coolest thing because my great-grandmother couldn't see very well by this point. My grandmother was in the middle, and at first, you know, my stitches were just about as bad as my great-grandmother's, but about halfway through the quilt, you could tell I kind of learned, and by the time you get to the end of the quilt, I'm a pretty good quilter. You can't really tell the difference between mine and my grandmother's at that point, and my grandfather would lay underneath the quilt. I guess when we'd hit a rough spot, we'd stick the needle through, and he'd pull it down for us. And shut it back. Anyway, we made the first quilt, but I did the dumbest thing. I quilted the ugliest quilt top, thinking that I wanted to save the other ones when I was better at it.
Right.
But the one that had all 3 of us quilting in it was so much more precious.
As
time went by, I never should have done it that way. But what do you know? You don't know anything.
No, that made sense.
Right. It made sense to me at the time. I was 18.
Right.
So I didn't make my own first quilt top until I was coming out of college and my best friend was getting married. And there was a factory that made choir robes and graduation gowns. And they had a big sale of their samples. So I went down and got you know, because still I was in college. I didn't have any money. Then got a big old box of dark gold, light gold, yellow, white, cream, whatever it was. And I tried to sew all of that acetate, really, into a quilt. And it was not terribly successful. But my girlfriend loved it. It was a good wedding present. And I really didn't do a lot of quilting even after that. I bought my first Bernina when I was 30, and I was pregnant with my first son. And I was all into layettes and a little bit of home deck and, you know, making things for him. And I really didn't get into serious quilting until my boys, both of them, got old enough that they didn't want mommy-made clothes anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't sewing a whole lot of clothes for me. And I admit readily that I'm a shopaholic, and I've almost never seen a piece of fabric I didn't like. And I didn't really need any of the fashion fabric, and about that same time, it started getting expensive. So I started doing projects with cotton and quilting, and, you know, I just kind of got more and more and more into quilting. And largely for a lot of reasons, a lot of women do, quilting doesn't have to fit.
Mm-hmm.
You know? You don't have to worry about whether your bottom is getting a little bigger, right? And so, and you go into your sewing room and you can make a block in about an hour where you're not going to get much done making a jacket in about an hour.
Yeah.
And so I really just enjoyed being able to break my sewing projects down into little pieces because I work full time, I travel a lot, and I love to get a hold of little girls like Ruth was and help them learn how to be creative, because we women, we need a creative outlet. And maybe we all people do, but certainly we women do. And so I get so much pleasure out of encouraging my girlfriends and coming up with projects and working with especially young people, because, you know, opening up that creative spirit in them or letting them see that they have it, it's just so fabulous. You know, Ruth is probably ready to surpass me in just a few years, but because she is so excited and passionate about it, and nothing makes me happier. And so I'm hoping there will be a day when Ruth tells her story and I'm as important to her as my Granny Catherine was to me.
Yeah. Let's jump back to, how did you go from living in Illinois to now you live in Texas?
Okay. So, like I said, my mom and dad were the only two that didn't. They were the only ones that didn't farm. And so my mom started college when I was in the third grade because she just didn't feel like she was making any money, you know, waiting tables or whatever. And so she said she either had to be a teacher or a nurse. She couldn't stand the idea of being a nurse. So she went to college to get her teaching degree. And so she did. But by the time she got her teaching degree, my dad's job was he needed to kind of live like inside a town almost because he was a soil conservation engineer, and he had gotten promoted enough that he needed to be in the office more.
Yeah.
And so we moved around central Illinois in like right outside of town, not in town, but right outside of town. But now I'm in high school and I, you know, got pretty good grades. And like I said, many went to college. I was going to college. So I went to the University of Illinois for 4 years. Well, by that time I knew I was not going to stay on the farm. So I said, okay, I don't know what I'm going to do. Being from downstate, you know, you're not crazy about Chicago. And I didn't really want to move up in Chicago. So I checked out St. Louis and Atlanta. I moved to Los Angeles for a summer. And then I came down to Dallas because I decided I was going to move where the economy was good and I could get a good job and I was going to have a great career. And so I came down here for spring break, and I said, okay, I think I could get used to it. I think I like it. I talked to another one of my girlfriends into moving down with me, and I said, well, we'll at least give it 6 months. So we move down, we get jobs, we get a cute little apartment. And 3 months later, she marries a friend of one of the guys I used to date and moves back to Illinois. Yeah, so I was here, I was working, I was not really going to go back to Illinois because there weren't jobs for me in central Illinois. So I stuck it out here. A couple years later, I talked my sister into moving down. My career took off. I made friends. Six, 7, 8 years later, I met and married my husband. And even though I relocated us several times, we lived in Kansas City. We moved down to South Florida, but we came back here. And this has been home. And largely because, you know, Dallas is one of those cities where there's enough diversity that in business you can always find a job. And that has been very important to me, that I work and I have a good job and that I can support my family. And I also have enough access to fabric and machines and patterns and friends, to sew with. In a town like Dallas and North Dallas and Carrollton, you're going to have that. And I have a lot of it. That's how I got here. I had $400, a Pinto, and a brand new college degree. So what else do you need?
We started out with a Pinto also.
Yeah. That's all you need to get you from here to there.
Okay, before I go on to some other quilting questions, do you do any other crafts?
Oh, that is such a problem because there is nothing that I don't want to learn. And so, oh my gosh, I knit, I crochet, I needlepoint, I embroider, I paint, I make doll shoes. There is no end to how much stuff I can accumulate because I think it's all interesting.
Yeah.
And so, oh my goodness, truly there is no end to it. I have to, every year, that's about the only New Year's resolution I make, is that I'm going to focus, okay, on only two or three or four things this year. And I can't tell you how many times I've given away all of my paints and my brushes and da-da-da-da-da-da. And then I don't know how it happens. 3 or 4 years later, I've got a whole big collection again.
Yeah. Don't you think some of those hobbies lend to the quilting experience?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. It's just another form of creativity.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what's so exciting about it. You know, it's just another way to think about things, or it's something else to learn and enjoy. And, you know, that's exactly what all of it is. You know, what do I need with 25 wooden birdhouses? But, you know, I find myself doing things like that.
Yeah.
You know, I'll buy them, I'll paint them, I'll design them, I'll play with them. And then what am I going to do with them?
Yeah.
It's just the process, you know,
yeah,
of having a creative outlet.
Yeah. Then it's, guess what everyone's getting for Christmas this year?
Exactly. That's right. You know, or I do all that, then I give all my stuff away, I give everything I made away, and then I'll be out someplace, I'll say, oh, I really like that. I could make that.
Mm-hmm.
Here
yeah.
we go again.
We already covered who introduced you to quilting.
Right.
So do you have a favorite quilt?
No, I don't have a favorite quilt. I don't have a favorite quilt I've made. I don't have a favorite quilt pattern. I'm just as happy giving them away as I am keeping them. An instructor at one of the Bernina stores just made this observation about me. She says, you don't really care about making the quilt. You just want to learn the technique. And I had never thought of that before, but it's absolutely true. You know, I might make 6, 7 blocks. I might make a whole quilt out of a certain technique that I hadn't used before.
Mm-hmm.
But then when I'm done with it, that's good. I'm done with that. I'm ready to move on. The first big project quilt I ever made was one of those peacemaker calendars that's all hand applique and so complicated and detailed and lovely and so labor intensive. Well, I stuck to it and I made the entire thing and I quilted it all by hand and bound it up and gave it to my sister and said, "Oh, I'm glad I don't have to do that again." Of course, I have an embroidery machine or two or three. So I really like learning how to incorporate embroidery designs into my quilting, how to quilt with the embroidery machine. I like learning the techniques. Now, I have done that, quilted on an embroidery machine, and I did a pretty good-sized quilt. And honestly, that's good. That was enough for me.
Mm-hmm.
I don't feel the need to do another one. So, you know, you asked me about my favorite one. I guess my favorite ones are the ones that are done.
You know?
That was pretty high on the list.
Oh, believe it or not, I have gotten that answer before.
I'll bet.
Well, do you have a favorite color you'd like to work with?
I try so, so hard not to buy my favorite colors. Because remember years ago, who were those ladies that had all the little miniature quilts and they talked about the magic colors? They said it's those ugly colors that you don't like that really bring character to a quilt.
Huh.
And I thought they were a little crazy. But I really have found that that's true. And so I try to buy colors I don't like at all. I mean, I focus on that. Because if left to my own, everything would be hot pink, turquoise, purple, you know. I mean, it would all run kind of in that color. So I focus on, you know, gold, orange, brown, gray, taupe, things that are unexpected in my color choices. Because they do, those colors, those kind of off colors, are kind of magical in quilts.
Yeah.
And so my favorite things, though, are truly turquoise keeps coming up and cats. I have a thing about cats. I wish I didn't, but I do. And I don't want to make cat quilts, and somehow I manage to.
Huh.
So Ruth found me a little 5-pack of fat quarters that were turquoise, white, black, and cats. Oh, my God.
She knows you.
She knows me. And I thought it was just fabulous. And, of course, I had to go out and find more, you know, so I would have a couple yards of each after I saw this collection. I'm serious when I say I'm a shopaholic.
Yeah. So what does your stash look like?
Well, so I built a studio out behind the house that is 20 feet by 20 feet. Then I bought a custom shelving, and I have, I think, 30 of those huge 60-gallon totes full of fabric. And then I have another wall that has all the, like, fat quarters and pieces. And then I have a couple of those sliding bin things. So I organize it the way it makes sense to me. So most of my cottons are by color, and most of my scraps are by color, except for Christmas is a color of its own. I don't know if you knew that.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Christmas is a color, and cats is a color, and so I have mostly by size of the fabric and type, all the cotton, and then by color or by specialty. But they're mostly in, you know, Elfa trays or in shoe boxes or in 60-gallon totes.
Wow.
Yeah, my sewing room is, if it was ever clean, it would be really lovely.
I'm always anxious to get started on the next one. I don't have time to stop and clean it up.
Me either.
Do you have a favorite tool in the process?
You know, no. I do a whole lot of charity sewing. A lot of charity sewing. So we make a lot of 18-inch girl doll clothes, and we make a lot of teenage girl purses, and make little dresses for Africa, and make purses for Africa. And so I think probably what gets the most use in my sewing room is one of those 16-inch Ulfa mat, you know, that spins. That's on
oh, yeah.
It. And because I find, boy, I can cut an awful lot of stuff out on that mat. And I've been through several now where I've just kind of worn them out. And so my Ulfa cutter and my rotating mat, they're pretty important. You know, obviously a good sewing machine, that goes without saying, right?
Yeah.
And then I've gotten these real thick wool pressing pads. And, oh, I love those. They're very good. They keep you from stretching your block out of place, but you can iron just about anything on them. I like those wool pressing pads. But I would say if I had to pick, my Ulfa cutters and my rotating mat are probably pretty high up on the list.
What part of the process do you like best?
You know, I love making patterns. I love drawing patterns. I like the creative part of it.
Mm-hmm.
But I am perfectly okay making 50 doll sundresses, you know, almost like factory line style. That doesn't really bother me either. So I like making one of a kind, and I like mass production, and I kind of like everything in between. If I have a chance to spend time with my sewing machine, fabric, and if I'm really lucky, a couple of girlfriends, then I don't think there's very many days better than that.
Yeah.
I have a great husband and a great family. I have a great house. I have four of the cutest grandsons you ever saw, and I love everything about them. But, you know, a really good day is spending about 4 or 5 hours with my fabric and just being creative and just sewing. And I go through phases, you know, like I probably have 25 quilt tops out there that need to be pin basted and quilted. And I might go 3-4 years without quilting any of them. And then I'll put 6 of them together and quilt them all at once. I just go in phases. I don't make anything for myself. And then I will make, you know, 10 cardigan sweaters. So it just hits me, you know, and then I think that's what I want to work on, the way I go.
Yeah.
And I'm so lucky to have the studio and the equipment and the every kind of fabric I could want to work on next. It's just a matter of how much time I've got available and what catches my eye.
Mm-hmm.
So I will sometimes go out to the sewing room, and I have promised myself all week long I'm going to finish that sweater, that jacket for myself. And I get out there, and some little piece of fabric catches my eye, and off I go. And 6 hours later, I've made 10 little purses for their store to give away to the girls at Christmas, and I didn't touch that sweater once.
Yeah.
So, to me, that's how you should sew, because however that speaks to me, and makes me happy, then that's what I should be sewing for.
Mm-hmm.
I learned a long time ago to not make lists of these are the things I wanted to finish next or whatever, because I would date those lists. And then 4, 5, 6, 7 years later, there's things on that list I didn't get done and make me feel bad.
Uh-huh.
So I said, well, I have a solution for that. I'm not making any more stinking lists. There's no point in feeling bad.
Right. But this is supposed to be something to make you feel good.
Yeah, that's right. So I don't make a list. I just let myself work on whatever seems like it would be fun today.
Yeah. Now, when I talked with Ruth, she mentioned, was it the Quilt Guild out there that she's part of, that you were part of?
Yes. So the American Sewing Guild, I joined it when I was in Kansas City, about the same time I bought my first Sprendina. And I belonged to it in Kansas City and then in South Florida. And then we moved up here, and there wasn't a guild yet, but there was one forming. And so I joined the DFW group about three months or so after it was initially chartered. So our local neighborhood group, the Texas Pen Pals, spun off of the American Sewing Guild. And that's the group. We sew at my church. I mean, my church hosts us. I started that group in 92. And we've been sewing together now a long while, right? A long while. I don't remember for sure when we started meeting at the church, because we first met in some retail stores, and then we met in some of the city places, but nothing ever really worked great until we started meeting at the church. So second Saturday of every month since August of 1992, I've been with my girls having a pen pals meeting and either having a lesson or sewing or just, you know, kind of being grateful to have each other.
Yeah, neat.
And that's where Jenny, Ruth's mom, came with one of the ladies from her church that had joined and brought the little girls with her. I think she brought Ruth at first and then all three of the girls at some point. And, you know, I take one look. There's a girl. There's a little girl. Like I said, I have four grandsons, but
yeah.
There's a little girl. And so I am just all over that. And I never let anybody come to a meeting or come help us that doesn't have something to do so they feel useful. And I can come up with a job. I don't care what your skill set is. And when Ruth was little, she was in charge of trimming my threads and turning things inside out and putting them in a pile and counting them until she could get old enough to do the next thing and the next thing and the next thing. So they've been valuable members of our group, you know, since they started, since they joined. Our first group of girls are now just about out of college, and I'm working, trying to get our third group of girls kind of up and going. And so I love it. I love it, love it, love it when we have girls that we can encourage and teach them that, you know, there was a period of time there where sewing was for your grandmother.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's having a resurgence. Sewing isn't for your grandmother. It's so that you can be unique and different and one of a kind. I try to make sure anybody that shows any interest in it, I try to find something that they can do that they will enjoy, that they can be productive.
That's so cool.
Yeah, it's so rewarding, you know. Somehow or another, I always manage to have an extra sewing machine. My husband even accused me one time of, like, sewing machines could just smell that this is where they belong. They would just show up on the front step. He swears that that's what that fabric does, is it just wanders around the neighborhood till it finds a home, finds me, you know. If there's a girl that wants to learn how to sew, somehow or another, I managed to find her a sewing machine that's going to be just fine. And I think Ruth has gone through several.
She did mention that. Yeah.
And so I managed to find, if they want to learn, I managed to find something for them to learn with. Everybody knows, you know, like their moms or whatever passed away. And they say, mm-hmm. Mom had an old sewing machine. You want it? Yeah, I want it. I want it. I got a home for it. And I have somebody lined up almost all the time where the next sewing machine can go. So,
what a blessing you are to others with that. That's really neat.
Yeah. Well, then, I shame them into helping me with all our charity sewing, too. So, did you want to come help us with that?
A little ways from Ohio. My next question is, what was your worst quilting experience?
Oh, I've got one shameful quilt out there in my studio. I just do not know what to do with it. I had Christmas cats and Christmas dogs, and I thought they would look so cute in an attic window pattern. But I did it all wrong. Instead of having, you know, like the verticals all be green and the horizontals all be red, I put the reds on the cats, the greens on the dogs. Well, they just look dumb. It just looks terrible. And making the attic windows, I got all those little inside V thing. They look fine. They all lay flat, but it is the ugliest, dumbest quilt I have ever seen. And every time I look at it, I think, why can I not figure out how to fix it? You know, why can't I figure out an applique or something to put on that quilt? But it's just hopeless. It is just plain awful. I even thought, well, maybe I'll slice through all those attic window things and, you know, turn the blocks. No, it is just, I don't know what to do. But, you know, even then, why haven't I just thrown it away? I don't know. It's still hanging out there, like, taunting me, like, I can't believe you can't figure out how to fix this quilt. Talk about a disaster. I am an acceptable quilter, and this thing is just nasty. It just, and it has fabric I like, and it's still just nasty. It just is awful. So there you go.
That would be rough, especially if you keep looking at it. What's a tip that you would like to give to others?
What I tell everybody that I work with or sew with or am around is a couple of things. If it makes you happy, then that's the right way to do it. Okay, just let it make you happy, right? But I also say all the time, we are striving for progress, not perfection. Sometimes we quilters will get a little carried away with every little corner matching and every little stripe, you know, and I say stop. So progress is important, not perfection. Make it. You will love it. It'll keep you just as warm, and you will wear it out the same way. So if you enjoy the process, then the end result is just fine. It's just fine. It does not have to be perfect. It's not going in the Smithsonian. Just enjoy it. Love it. Give yourself a break. And the very next time you start to point a flaw after somebody, I want you to bite your tongue. It is not necessary to tell everybody what you messed up. You know, forgive yourself and just have fun doing it. Whatever it is. You know, when I teach young girls sewing, I don't do it by the book. If they're not interested in that part, I don't waste my time with that part.
Mm-hmm.
I try to follow where they want to go creatively and go with them. Help them avoid big mistakes, but just kind of go with them. I don't have to teach them French seams when they're making pull-on shorts.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I just let them make their favorite pair of shorts out of their favorite fabric, because then maybe they'll try again.
Yeah.
So I think it should be fun.
Yeah.
And that, you know, you sometimes get in the point where it's not fun. That's one of the things I think helps me a lot. I didn't start out as a quilter. I started out as a sewer.
Mm-hmm.
And sewing is far more forgiving than quilting. And so I didn't have all these rules. You know, like,
yeah,
it didn't have to be exactly a quarter of an inch and da-da-da-da-da. I'm not bound by those rules as much, and I think I enjoy the process more because of it. And I see ladies that, like, they get stressed out over a quilt. That's not the point.
Mm-mm.
Right? It is not the point. The whole point is to have fun and use up some of that fabric so you have an excuse to go buy more.
Okay. That's great. Thank you so much. Is there anything else that you thought of that I didn't ask about?
No, I don't think so. I have some quilts from my great-grandmother and my grandmother that I really cherish. But I like quilts in every kind of condition. I've got one that is just a nasty threadbare mess, and it's still just a perfectly fine quilt. I think it's such a good thing to know how to do, and it's just so rewarding, especially when you can share it with others.
Yeah. Thank you so much for spending your time with me. I so appreciate it.
Not a problem. I appreciate what you're doing. I hope a lot of young people listen to your blog so that we can have a whole lot more people out here doing the same thing and really, really being able to be creative.
That would be really cool.
Well, thank you very much.
Uh-huh.
Hope you enjoyed this episode of A Quilter's Life. You can find more stories on aquilterslife.com or subscribe on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts so each episode will be downloaded automatically. Thanks for listening. Thank you.